So this morning I've been asked to speak about Srila Prabhupada's pastimes here in Juhu. So we were speaking the other night also. Maybe some of you were there. It might be a little repetitious for you. But we'll speak anyway on these early pastimes. I thought I would read a little bit from Lilamrita of that particular section. Actually, I had come to India in 1970. I was doing a master's thesis in photography. And I had met the devotees the summer before, the summer of 1970, doing those articles, one on the New York temple in New Vrindavan, and the other one on the Los Angeles temple. Those were my first two professional assignments and my last two professional assignments. So I had been traveling with Srila Prabhupada, and he at first was staying in a place called the Sea Palace Hotel down in Colaba with a very wonderful life member, Mr. Chabria. So I was staying with the devotees at that time. This was early 1971. And then we moved to the Akash Ganga building, which is on Warden Road, on the seventh floor of Akash Ganga building. And that was a very luxurious apartment. And it was overlooking the Arabian Sea. And the devotees were actually very, very happy there. Very, you know, Western-style comforts, running water, everything, hot showers. And Srila Prabhupada, the best part of that was that Srila Prabhupada was our president, temple president. And he would chant japa with us, and he'd, you know, walk around the different rooms to see how things were going. Sometimes he'd come in the kitchen. I remember he showed us how to make chapatis. That was my first engagement, was making the dough for chapatis. And Srila Prabhupada said, if the dough is good, then the chapatis will be good. But it had to be very well kneaded and the right ingredients, of course. So that was a very, very wonderful time. We're all very happy. Actually, there's a few pastimes at that place. One time, most days, Srila Prabhupada would go on a morning walk, and one woman, I forget her name, older lady, would come and drive him to Worli to walk along the beach. And so one day she said that, Srila Prabhupada, I have a plan that devotees can make lots of money. She had an investment plan. So she told Prabhupada what it was. And Srila Prabhupada said, actually, I don't want the devotees to get into this. He said, I want them to go door to door and beg. So that's that was Srila Prabhupada's preference. And we could see that as years went by, sometimes even myself would become involved in certain investments to try to make money. And usually they failed. We would invest with a friend who had a great scheme, and we'd lose our money most often. So Srila Prabhupada's instruction was very important in that regard. And he mentions that also in the Bhagavatam, in different purports, that we should be satisfied with whatever comes of its own accord. We should not be greedy to try to earn extra money. So we all have our destiny in terms of what will come to us and what won't. And that also applies to Lakshmi. So we should be satisfied with whatever comes. And that was Srila Prabhupada's lesson in that particular pastime. Then one time we came out of going on a morning walk, and there were some beggars on the street, and Srila Prabhupada took out some coins, asked for coins, and he gave them to the beggars. We were quite surprised. Srila Prabhupada would sometimes do that. Also in Allahabad, he would do that with some of the poor people. Then I told the other night, I was telling how when the deities of Radha Rasa Bihari first arrived at Akash Ganga, of course we were having kirtan in our morning program at Akash Ganga every morning, and the neighbors didn't seem too disturbed, but the landlord was very disturbed. And actually, when the deities arrived in a truck, they came in wooden crates, he would not allow us to bring the deities up to the seventh floor to the apartment, because he accused us of smuggling drugs. He could not understand how we were experiencing such ecstasy in the kirtans and the programs. So he thought it was artificially induced by drugs, and he thought we were smuggling drugs. So he would not allow the crates to be taken up. He insisted that they be opened right on the ground as they were taken off the truck. So we opened one of the crates, and it was Srimati Radharani who appeared first. And we all paid our obeisances flat on the ground. We were very ecstatic to see her. And so after witnessing our enthusiasm, the landlord allowed us to... He realized it was a foolish request, and he allowed us to take the deities up. So one day, Mr. Nair came to visit Srila Prabhupada in the morning. And I came into Srila Prabhupada's room, and he was discussing with Srila Prabhupada about offering the land. And the first thing I noticed about him is that he was very nervous. His hands were shaking, and he was sweating. And he was at the same time offering this property. So I was immediately suspicious. And I was thinking later that maybe he was unconsciously realizing his difficulty later on, his actual demise in dealing with Srila Prabhupada, offering the land and trying to take it back. And in our dealings with Mr. Nair, Giriraj Das Brahmachari at the time and I would go see him regularly trying to work out the difficulties. We all know somewhat of the history. But it simply got worse and worse until we know that he eventually passed away. And then his wife gave us the land, agreed to sell us the land. Just that morning, the morning after Mr. Nair came to offer the land to Srila Prabhupada, we all got in a taxi, Srila Prabhupada, myself, Shamsundar Prabhu, and Tamal Krishna Goswami, and went to Juhu, drove to Juhu, to see the property. And Srila Prabhupada immediately wanted it. He was very enthusiastic to have that land. And of course, we know that he used to walk on that very land in his visits to Srimati Mararji when he was preaching to her. He used to visit her bungalow in Juhu. So he was immediately enthusiastic, and the managers were not, because it meant, you know, leaving our downtown beautiful apartment and coming to this property, which was overgrown with weeds. There were rats, mosquitoes, flies. It was near a fishing village, so oftentimes the fish smell would come, as we still have it today. So they were very not very enthusiastic. But Srila Prabhupada really, really wanted it, and he asked us to make plans after the contract was signed. He asked us to make arrangements to move the deities immediately onto the property. So he also was suspicious, because Srila Prabhupada at that time knew that Mr. Nair had sold the land previous, made arrangements to sell the land previously to a company, and then by legal maneuvers managed to take it back, and the company lost their money. There was actually a lawsuit at the time that we accepted Mr. Nair's offer. Lawsuit from that company and suing Mr. Nair. But still, Prabhupada, of course, he was, the history was that Srila Prabhupada took many chances in taking the L.A. temple. We didn't really have the money at that time. Or the Boston temple, we didn't have the money for that either. But Srila Prabhupada had faith that if we made that commitment, that Krishna would respond and somehow or other arrange to get those properties. So again, he made took a risk for Krishna. And of course, this is the result where we're sitting today. So it is very glorious. So those days were, actually there was one statement in the Lilamrita. I probably won't read from this. I just got some ideas. I read it before class here. But Tamal Krishna Goswami was one of the opponents for moving to this land. And he said, Prabhupada, we need Western amenities. We're from the West. How will we be able to live there? We need the Western style living. And even in America, in our temples, we had, everything was very nice and clean. And Prabhupada's answer to that was, don't you want to make advancement? So by austerity, we make advancement. Austerity is the wealth of the Brahmins. So by undergoing austerity, we can make advancement in Krishna consciousness. But if we become too comfortable in material life, then that is a disadvantage. So I consider myself quite fortunate to be part of the early days here in Mumbai. And one of the reasons was that I could actually tolerate the difficulties a little better than most of the Westerners, because I had lived in Malaysia for 3 years as a Peace Corps volunteer. So I was a teacher in a very small village on the east coast of Malaysia, in very, primitive living conditions as we had here in Mumbai. But I have to say the conditions here were probably worse than Malaysia. We built a temporary hut for living, and actually the deities were installed in that hut. And that hut was right in the middle of the neighbors, in the middle of the apartment buildings. The apartment buildings were in a circle, and this hut was in quite a long hut, a place for the men to live, place for the women to live, and a place for the deities. But in those days, we were very, very young. Srila Prabhupada started his movement in 1966, and this is only 1971. So most devotees were 1 year, 2 years, 3 years in the movement, not very long. Plus, coming to a different culture, there were maybe one or two local Indians at that time, but 20, 25 Westerners, and not used to the culture, not used to the heat, the humidity, so many things. So oftentimes we were fighting amongst ourselves, unfortunately, due to extreme difficult conditions and also due to immaturity. I was the oldest, one of the oldest in the group, and I was 25. So we had no elders to consult, except Srila Prabhupada. Actually, it became so bad in that hut that actually Srila Prabhupada asked that the Ishringasan be made for the deities to move them out of that confined area. So Ishringasan was made by Naranarayan Prabhu. It was made out of bamboo. And when you stood on it to do arti, the whole thing would sway back and forth. It was so rickety. My wife Ishaka Devi could not take living in the hut, so she moved up to the top of one of the apartment buildings and built a lean-to off a little wall on the top of the roof. The wall was maybe this high, so she built a little room with palm fronds and plastic, and that was her room, and she was actually very happy up there. She wrote quite a few BTG articles from that little hut. I look back on it, I consider that one of the happiest times in my Krishna consciousness, because Srila Prabhupada was there, and if he wasn't there, he was always writing to us as to trying to find out what how the progress was going. And actually, as secretary of Bombay in those early days, I was writing him once a week on his request. So he was always concerned with what was going on there. And when he came, it was very, very wonderful. There would be programs, prasad distribution at night. Srila Prabhupada personally would take a prasadam, a tray of prasadam, and distribute it to all the people, including first the children. There were a lot of poor little children. As you can see it in our videos, Srila Prabhupada distributing Mahaprasadam. And actually Brahmananda wanted to do it. He said, "No, Prabhupada, let me do it." And Srila Prabhupada said, "No, I will do it." He was very insistent on distributing himself. So those are some pastimes in Juhu. In 1973, we got a letter, my wife and I, from Karanda Prabhu. And he asked us to come back to America and make a film about the movement, about ISKCON. We didn't have any films on ISKCON. So, just prior to that, we had gone to Delhi to help the temple out up in Delhi with Tejas Prabhu. And while we were in Delhi, the temple here was attacked. There was an attempt to demolish the temple. So we came back down and waged a huge publicity campaign against the perpetrators. And that, of course, Mr. Nair was behind that to try to force us off the land. And of course, that was very successful. So just after that, we returned to America and to New York City. Srila Prabhupada actually financed that first film from his BBT fund. And that was quite unusual in those days. Shishi Radharasa Bihari Gita. Srila Prabhupada was very emphatic that his money from the BBT be used for two things: books and temples. So this was quite unusual that he financed our first film, and the amount was $13,000, and that bought us the film equipment, the editing equipment, and two round the world tickets. So we went to different places. We tried to go to different places that Srila Prabhupada was already there to meet him to film. So after filming in New York, we went to London where Srila Prabhupada installed the deities on Janmasmi at the Bhaktivedanta Manor. So that anniversary is coming up, the 40th anniversary next year of the installation of the deities. And so we filmed for about and produced the film in about 1 year. In March 1974, the film was premiered at the Mayapur Festival in Srila Prabhupada's room. Those of you who have been to Srila Prabhupada's room know it's very small in Mayapur. And all the GBC, all the sannyasis, all the temple presidents, and Vishakha Devi and myself, plus a very large projector, were there in Srila Prabhupada's room. And we showed the film, and it was quite a shock to discover that the film was running at a slow speed, because the voltage, I didn't calculate on the different voltage. So the film was running slow, and the narrator spoke very slowly. So it was quite a shock too. So we sat through the whole thing. Instead of 30 minutes, it took about 40 minutes because of the slow speed. But nobody seemed to mind, and Srila Prabhupada afterwards said that we used good psychology in making the film. He liked it very much. So during that stay in India after the Mayapur festival, we had several pandals in different cities. One was in Tirupati, in different places. So after each night, the evening's program, there would be kirtan, there would be lecture, and there would be another kirtan, and then the film would be shown. And each time Srila Prabhupada, I expected him to get up and leave because he'd seen it. But every time he stayed and watched it again. One time he even watched it backwards, because Srila Prabhupada was here, the screen was here, and the projector was here, so everything was reversed. So the deities were flipped, everything was reversed, but still he watched it. Srila Prabhupada wrote us a letter. He said, make these films, Krishna conscious films, the most popular films. And with the earnings that you make from these films, make further films. And also, I asked him after that if I could support my family also with that. And he said yes. So that was one of the first businesses within ISKCON. We went on to make three other films that Srila Prabhupada personally saw. One was Brilliant as the Sun. And that was a film on book production. Srila Prabhupada actually asked for that film because he wanted to show his godbrothers how he was fulfilling the order of his spiritual master to publish and distribute books. So after making that film, we brought it to Srila Prabhupada at the Gaur Purnima Festival in 1976. And I would sit with Srila Prabhupada in his room. Of course, we showed it publicly. But after that, I would sit in Srila Prabhupada's room, and when even one visitor would come in, he would ask for the film to be shown. And he would sit and watch the film. One person or two persons would sit and watch the film. Another film that we made was The Spiritual Frontier on the New Vrindavan community. And that was premiered in Los Angeles. Kirtanananda Swami came out. And when he came, he brought ice cream for Srila Prabhupada. And he packed it with dry ice and shipped it. And after the premiere, we were up in Srila Prabhupada's room. We were all eating ice cream from New Vrindavan. And Srila Prabhupada enjoyed that film. Another film was Spark of Life. And that was a film, that was a departure from our previous film. It was a dramatic short film of about 22 minutes. And it showed how we're not the body. And we based it on the teachings of Bhagavad Gita. Actually, the film was requested by the Bhaktivedanta Institute. And we were working with them to try to produce a film, a scientific film on Krishna consciousness. But some of the emphasis of that proposal by the Institute was that we use the current arguments, how life came from matter, from the scientists, and try to disprove those arguments. But our dilemma was that in the future those arguments would change, because their arguments are always changing. Correct, Rasaraj Prabhu? Yeah. So we decided to base the film on the teachings of Bhagavad Gita, which don't change. And we produced the film, Srila Prabhupada watched it, but there wasn't one devotee in the film. So it was quite a departure from our other films. So there was some discussion afterwards. The members of the Institute weren't very happy with the result, and one of them said, this is just for women and children. Nobody will take it seriously. And Srila Prabhupada, at the end of the discussion, said, well, what was the response? Because we showed the film in Los Angeles. So after we showed the film, one person came up to me and he said, I can understand after seeing this film that I'm not the body. And he was a visitor. So Srila Prabhupada's response was, then it is a success. So that film was actually shown throughout India for many, many years. And even the Bhaktivedanta Institute started showing it with very good results. So we went on to make about 4 other films. And the last one was 1986. It was a film on the life of Lord Chaitanya for Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's 500th anniversary, 1986. I'd like to just elaborate a little bit about the showing of the Spark of Life here in Mumbai. That was in 1977. Srila Prabhupada was living in his quarters here in the guest house. And the construction was going on. And Srila Prabhupada actually was encouraged not to stay here because of the noise of the construction. And Srila Prabhupada's answer to that was, it is like music, it is like kirtan, because I can hear the work going on, I know what's going on, so I'm very enthused. We know that Srila Prabhupada soon afterwards went to Vrindavan, and then we did some filming of his final days. And initially it was difficult for us to film. We were not allowed, actually, by his secretaries and nurses because they thought it would disturb him. But then finally Srila Prabhupada was asked whether we could film, and he gave his consent that we could. So that became the final lesson, which is a difficult film. It was a very difficult film to shoot and also a difficult film to edit. I did show that in 1978 to the GBC, and their decision was not to release it. So I didn't release it for about 15 years. But in the meantime, I showed it to maybe a handful of devotees, 5 or 6 devotees, and invariably after watching it, they became very, of course it's always difficult to watch, but they became more enthusiastic in their Krishna consciousness, more determined, because they could see Srila Prabhupada's determination. So we released it finally. One of the arguments also was that Srila Prabhupada asked everyone, all his disciples, to come at that time and be with him in Vrindavan. And that was not very well, that was not widely broadcast, that desire. So many devotees felt left out. So they said, well, you know, Srila Prabhupada asked for us to come, so you should at least release the film. So we did, about 15 years ago. And that film is also included in our 31-hour DVD series of all the films that we know exist of Srila Prabhupada and his ISKCON society from 1965 to 1977. So I think I'll stop here. Are there any questions or comments? Yes, Prabhu.
Thank you for your nice class. Wonderful. And I just wanted to know, later when you decided to release the final lesson, that was your own decision, or you went back to the GBC and this time they said okay?
Yeah, members, the GBC never voted on it as a body. It was never an official decision. But that was their feeling, that it should not be released. Then some years later I did consult individual members and they agreed, although some never agreed. We released the Your Every Well Wisher, which is Srila Prabhupada's biography, and in the end of that film there is Srila Prabhupada translating on his bed in that condition. And some members, some leaders banned the showing of that film in their particular zones. But of course today it's, you know, everyone can see it. But invariably, if I found that even outsiders, when they saw this film of Srila Prabhupada translating in his final days, they became very moved and impressed. So I think in the end it was justifiable.
Yeah, definitely. You know, just seeing Prabhupada translating and commenting even in the last moment, it's very wonderful and inspiring. Mm-hmm. Very uplifting.
Yeah.
Just two more, one more question before the more comment. In 82 we used to have, I had at least in Chennai temple, a small 8mm projector.
Mm.
And then I used to make, I would calculate at least 200 to 300 programs. Many in colleges, but many in banks and other places. And we will just walk in with a little 8mm projector, and it had Spark of Life in it.
You know, a suitcase.
Yeah, it was a suitcase. And then we would just play it.
Or actually, a briefcase. It was about, you know, this big.
Yeah, a small black one.
Fairchild projector.
So at least 300 programs, a couple of 100 programs at least I must have done. Anyway, that's a long time ago. And I don't know whether I should ask this to you personally later or here, but I think I'll try to frame it in such a way it's appropriate for the public. Someone once told me long time ago, and I had meant to ask you, and you know, I just never asked, is that when you were doing you were ever well wisher, you were interviewing that lady, the wife of
Sally Agarwal.
Huh?
Sally Agarwal?
Sally Agarwal. And that you felt that she was tremendously spontaneous when she was speaking about Prabhupada. That you were most touched by her. I don't know whether that was true, but someone told me that was quite, at least I would think 15 years ago.
Yeah,
somebody
told me. She was genuine, very genuine.
So you can say something more about that.
Sally Agarwal was the wife of what's his first name? Gopal Agarwal. And I went to interview her. He wasn't there at the time, but she had wonderful appreciation for Prabhupada. She had great love for Prabhupada, and that is Prabhupada's amazing ability to preach. You know, first time in America, living in a household. You know, they eat meat. So it must have been extremely difficult for Srila Prabhupada, but at the same time he was always a gentleman in all circumstances and conditions. So he basically, she had great love for him, the way he treated her and cooked for them. You know. So that was that's a very wonderful interview. She talks about Prabhupada's oceanic smile. And at the end, I think she says something to the effect that she just says never loved anyone as much as Srila Prabhupada. So.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Adhivar. I always appreciate all your films. Thank you for all your wonderful service. I can relate to what you were saying about Srila Prabhupada. I think you must have been talking about Hare Krishna world, the one that he watched so many times.
Well, it was the Hare Krishna people.
Yes, well, yeah, Hare Krishna people. Yeah. And I mean, still that's being shown so many places in the world, even though, you know, it was done so long ago. And I was in Belgaum last year, you know, they had a Pandal program after the Rath Yatra, and they were showing that film, and I must have watched it 4 or 5 times, and each time I'd see it, I would see something new. It's like there's so much in each film that, you know, you can't take it all in one sitting. It's really amazing. And also wanted to thank you for bringing out that final lesson film. I was the same way when I first saw it. I couldn't even watch it because just to see Srila Prabhupada in that state, it was too painful. But then the second time I saw it, I was real calm, and I got so much from that film. It's like, it's really unbelievable, the knowledge which is in that film, if you actually can watch it in a calm, clear state of mind and really perceive what's going on, it's unbelievable. So I greatly appreciate your work. Thank you.
Yes, ma'am.
Hare Krishna Prabhu. Thank you for narrating the pastimes of Srila Prabhupada and about the films that you've offered to him. Can you elaborate and give your thoughts on how Srila Prabhupada, he encouraged $13,000, which is a lot of money in those days, from BBT funds to be used to films, and why you feel, or your understanding of Prabhupada's feeling of importance of producing Krishna conscious films. Why all this money was allocated, and what was Prabhupada's desire behind it?
Srila Prabhupada understood the power of media. There's no question about that. And probably understood the spiritual master understands past, present, and future. So we know today that the preferred media is visual, audiovisual, with many, and it's becoming more and more so. So, and Srila Prabhupada quite a few times expressed interest in television and films. Prabhupada wrote me a letter. He said these Krishna conscious films would be the most popular films ever produced. So we still have a lot of work to do. And he wrote Nisargananda Prabhu to make feature films. And when there was a proposal to air Srila Prabhupada's lectures on television. And he was very, very enthusiastic. He said, "I will drop everything else for this program." So there was a series of lectures that were filmed in 1972 during his visit to Los Angeles. So he was very hopeful of... Those were never aired on television, but he was expressed great enthusiasm for that idea. So in that way, Srila Prabhupada encouraged audiovisual production. So we have we're here in Mumbai to try to carry that out, that order, ongoing order, to produce popular films, feature films. So we ask for your blessings in that regard. Srila Prabhupada's blessings, I hope, are with us. There's an interesting story, and when Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj was going to the Eastern European countries to preach, he was in Srila Prabhupada's room in Mayapur about to embark on that preaching mission. And Srila Prabhupada asked all the devotees in the room to bless his endeavors. So one of the devotees said, "Srila Prabhupada, all he needs is your blessings. He doesn't need our blessings." So Prabhupada's answer was, "No, he needs the blessings of all the Vaishnavas." So we're humbly asking for those blessings to continue on. Hare Krishna. Anything else? Yes, Prabhu.
You are planning to do on these feature films? that you are here in Mumbai. You told me this earlier this morning.
Okay. Last year, Nisringananda Prabhu came to investigate the possibility of producing feature films here in Mumbai. And he met many, many devotees. And one of them was a devotee neither one of us knew. His name is Janardhadi Prabhu from France. And he's been involved in the film industry for the past 7 years here in Mumbai, and previous to that in France, in Paris. He has extensive experience in film distribution and production. He himself has produced a film here in India and also films in Europe. So Nisringananda Prabhu came back very enthusiastic after that trip. He met many, many people in the film industry, and we met a writer also. We've hired a writer for the first of the series of five films that we're proposing, and we're forming a company for this purpose. And our idea is not to only distribute in India, but to distribute internationally. To make films, Hindi films and English, we can shoot in both languages. Make films not only for the Indian market, but for international market. Make them the quality that will be appreciated in the West. So I think we have a very unique team, combination of devotees. So we're hopeful. Thank you very much, yeah, Prabhu.
Or maybe it's what is it? Ramanujas is
Ramanujas. I know him.
Yes. It's, so you know he's putting a lot of lectures and things on television.
That's right. He wants to start a 24-hour. ISKCON Hare Krishna channel. So if he can do that, we would certainly help him. He's actually in India, or will be arriving in India today. He'll be in Bombay in about a week, Mumbai in about a week. Well, thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Hare Krishna.